Hello, Muskegon. A really special treat today. DJ Hilson, by the way, in case you, I'm sure we've run the promo that I wasn't paying attention to. But really special a guest and topic today. It's what I would like to think of. I think of it two ways. One, as we've talked about on the show, Big Rob, we've talked a lot about trying to be proactive in a lot of the things that we do. Yes, because ultimately, you know, from the law enforcement perspective, in my office's perspective, we do a lot of reactive things. But it's in the proactive space where I think we start to make a real big difference. And you know what's really great, and I continue to talk about this, and we continue to talk about this, is how collaborative and the collaborative spirit that Muskegon has. And it's really evidenced in a lot of the different things, but this truly, in my opinion, really highlights how collaborative and the collaborative spirit that we have here in Muskegon, because of the partnership that has grown and developed over the last couple of years from, in some respects, an unlikely partner. It's great how these things develop. And I'll let our guest, you know, kind of lay some history down. But just for the listeners' sake, being involved in some different stakeholder and community groups gave me the opportunity to be a part of a presentation of a research project that had been done by a resident, so a physician in training, if you will, and ultimately was supervised, if I'm not mistaken, by our guest. And that's where I first met Dr. Brian Stork, because I did not know him in his professional capacity, but
not yet.
You know, I am getting older, but ultimately met him through this, and that just built upon a relationship that has led to what we're going to talk about today. But we'll get to that in just a second. But first and foremost, I'd like to introduce our guest, Dr. Brian Stork, who is a physician urologist here in town.
Oh, okay.
So let's start, doctor, if you will. Let's start with maybe a little bit of background about yourself, and then we'll move into how you and I get to work together.
Sure. Well, thank you, DJ. Thank you for inviting me to the show, and thank you for your leadership in this space and for continue to raise the topic of youth violence and firearm injury prevention to the forefront here in Muskegon. As you mentioned, I'm a urologist. Urologists deal with, kind of anything from the kidneys down to where the urine comes out. And so that's my day job. I've been in Muskegon going on 23 years now. Really love the community. I grew up in rural Iowa, and there's actually a lot of similarities between where I grew up on a really small farm and the community of Muskegon. So, for example, my parents were farmers and very independent, very self-reliant. But farmers, they need to stick together. They need to form community to survive, right? And from what I can see here in Muskegon, it's the same thing, right? There are some fiercely independent people, self-sufficient people here in Muskegon. But without the community, you know, we can't rise to the next level or arguably even survive. When I was growing up in the 80s, there was quite a bit of difficulty in the agriculture industry. They called it the farm crisis. You may have heard of Farm Aid or whatnot.
Yep.
And there were a lot of suicides amongst farmers at that time, and actually farmers still have a really high rate of suicide now compared to other occupations. But what struck me at that time is that I had a friend who I competed against. He was from a different town, and one January night, his mother shot her husband, my friend, his brother and sister, and then shot herself.
Wow.
In a murder-suicide, which is really unusual in Iowa. And then later, in the early 2000s, there was a very famous coach named Ed Thomas. He was a great football coach, probably similar. You know, football's big in Iowa.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Similar to here in Muskegon. He was a great coach. He'd won a couple state championships. And more importantly, he was a great role model for the kids. And he was gunned down in the weight room in front of his whole team.
Wow.
So this issue, you know, even though my medical specialty isn't a trauma surgeon or an ER doctor, but this issue has been festering in my mind for a long time.
Well, that's interesting. And ultimately, as I indicated in my little introduction, there came a point in time where Trinity Health, Mercy Hospital at the time, I think, because it's just recently turned to Trinity Health, but Trinity Health, at least some physicians, ER physicians, took an interest in what they were seeing coming through the emergency room as it related to folks that were coming in with gunshot wounds. Is that accurate?
And, yeah, that's correct.
And then ultimately there was a resident, and I don't know if he took this upon himself or was assigned the project. Maybe you can fill in the blanks there. But did a study, an actual study, based on the individuals that were coming into our local emergency room with gunshot wounds.
Yeah, that's right. You may remember maybe 2015, 2017, there was a big spike in gun violence in our community. And as a urologist, you know, I only take care of maybe 3 or 4% of those patients. But I got called to the hospital to take care of a young man who had a bullet through his kidney. And after the surgery, which fortunately was successful, I went out to this waiting room at Hackley. I loved practicing at Hackley.
Yeah.
Great community hospital. And there was a room of probably 20 or 30 people out there, and everybody had their heads down. And, you know, I said, hey, you know, I'm sorry this happened, but he's going to be okay. And nobody really talked to me or looked up at me or anything, and I thought that was kind of odd. And I went up to the ICU later to check on him, and the nurses told me that this was the third time he had been admitted to the hospital with a gun violence injury. So I happened to be walking down to the emergency room to talk to or see another patient, and I asked some of my ER colleagues, you know, what's going on with this? What are we doing to prevent it? And they were, I think, so inundated with the number of injuries that nobody had really thought a lot about, hey, is there anything we can do to try to prevent this? And that's understandable, you know, when you're busy and you're overwhelmed, it's hard to think about anything other than treating and streeting, as they say, you know. But I think I had a little different perspective from my personal experience and from the fact that, you know, I'm not from this community and I don't see these injuries all the time. And fortunately, there was a resident, an emergency room resident, Chris Mattson, who kind of took up the charge and reviewed 4 years' worth of injuries in Muskegon County. If I remember right, we had about 304 gun violence injuries that we treated at the hospital. And that doesn't include suicides, because people who attempt suicides with a gun are about 90% effective. So we kind of rarely see suicide patients in the hospital. So that kind of changes the data a little bit.
Right.
And what Chris found, you know, is that unfortunately the victims in our community are generally African American, and they're generally young men. You know, about 85% of the time. So, you know, when you think about healthcare, and healthcare is really trying to address disparities right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge disparity, right? Why is this happening? Is there anything at all we can do to prevent it? And even if you're of the mindset that, hey, you know, I don't really care about that. There's some reasons, some real reasons to care. We found that, you know, about $5 million in expenditures were spent on the care of these victims. And, you know, if you or your family go to the emergency room at night and you need care, and there's a person who's been injured with a gun violence injury before you, you know, we only have so many resources at the hospital, and you're going to wait, right?
Right.
So even if you're not necessarily sympathetic to gun violence victims, you know, the expenditures increase healthcare costs, and they may affect you directly if you or your family have to wait to get care. So there's a lot of reasons to want to try to do something about this.
Absolutely. Well, and what was interesting here, Big Rob, is that Chris Mattson presented his paper in a PowerPoint form. This was right around, still around the COVID time, if I remember correctly, because it was on Zoom. I remember being on Zoom. And this was to our Social Justice Commission. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, as a result of that, we formed a sort of subcommittee to look at how, you know, the community could embrace and incorporate Mercy or Trinity at the time and the resources they had in order to work on a prevention program. And it should be of no shock and surprise I decided to chair that subcommittee. And that's where the relationship between Dr. Stork and I began. And what was really amazing to me, one, his passion is second to none when it comes to this. And two, it was a recognition on his part, certainly, that you know the hospital does play a role in this. Outside of the treating and everything else, what you would consider to be their job,
right?
They have another responsibility, and that is to work towards prevention. And I love that because again, you know the opportunity to tap into the knowledge and the resources of that sector in this space is awesome.
Right.
And it came to fruition pretty quickly because it was shortly after that conversation that we had another subcommittee meeting where we started talking about the University of Michigan and their institute on its gun violence. Is it not? I mean, I always get these titles mixed up. They're, you know, these because so help me out here, doctor, because I don't want to sound stupid.
Well, it's hard. There's these huge acronyms, right? So what happened is that Chris and I were working on this paper together. And you know, when you publish a paper, there's a bunch of people that you send it out to who don't know you, and then they rip it to shreds, right? They criticize it. It's called peer review. And one of the peer reviewers, who probably is a Michigan professor, said, "Hey, how come you're not talking about this Michigan Youth Violence Prevention Center?" You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't know anything about it. Fortunately, I work for the University of Michigan now, so that was handy.
Yes.
But it turns out that there's five of these centers across the United States. They're funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and they do great work in the community. Their whole purpose is to try to reduce violence in our communities. So they're scattered across the nation, and, you know, it's one of those deals where we called them up and said, "Hey, would you be interested in working with us?" And as it happens, these institutions have to apply for funding every 5 years. And they were up for renewal. Like in 2 weeks, they had to submit their renewal.
I remember that.
So I don't know if you remember or not, but it was like we were racing.
Yep. it was amazing because we went from the initial meeting to a sub meeting, and then next thing I know, I'm in a Zoom meeting with Dr. Carter and his staff over at the University of Michigan at this center, and we're talking about how they can incorporate what we're trying to do in their grant proposal, essentially funding an operation here in Muskegon. And that was, I mean, to your point, doctor, we were moving quick. But it was taking advantage of an opportunity and being blessed with the idea that we could take advantage of that opportunity, which was awesome. And so that's where I learned for the first time about this program called Safe for Teens and how we were going to create a pilot project in order to implement Safer Teens, and in a nutshell, because I'm going to let Doc here really dive into it. But in a nutshell, Safer Teens is an evidence-based program born out of the University of Michigan, is it not?
Yeah. Yes,
and ultimately, it is an intervention strategy, and it's based off of looking and talking to teens that are at risk. Having them go through a very simple questionnaire, 3 questions, and based upon how those questions are answered determines what the next step is and whether or not an intervention has to take place. And that intervention is where the evidence-based stuff comes in, where they do essentially come in and start talking to the individual whom has answered these questions in such a way that puts them at risk for gun violence. And so it's a way to quickly identify someone who could be on the cusp of either being a victim or being a perpetrator, and then intervening at that moment in time. And that was sort of the basis of how we got our first batch of funding through that. So the first thing I want you to talk about here, Doctor, is the Safer Teens program itself. Dive a little bit deeper than my very glossed explanation. And then let's talk a little bit about how it was delivered in that pilot process.
Okay, yeah. But can I back up just a little
you
bit
may.
First?
Yes.
First of all, I want to acknowledge the people in the community that are already doing work on
yes.
this topic, right? So I've heard Big Ron speak before, right?
Yes, sir.
And we work closely with, the guns group, Gaining Unity Through Nonviolent
Solutions. Dr. Pamela
Solutions.
Smith.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Ron Jenkins.
Ron Jenkins.
Janet Robinson.
Yep.
So, you know, the idea here is not to compete, but to complete.
Yes.
If you will.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least to complement or, you know, find ways to. There's no one solution to this.
Right.
Right. So the community work that's being done is invaluable.
Yes.
This is just, we're just, you know, adding another flavor to the. To the buffet, right?
Yes.
Of options. Okay. So Safer Teens was actually developed by a physician named Rebecca Carter, who had really kind of a challenging childhood, and I think was really sensitive to trauma and the effects of trauma in the family, domestic violence. And I'm sure that's what helped spurred her.
Yep.
And she's actually gone on to become the president of the University of Minnesota.
That's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
And so one of the reasons I think that's important is because when we met with the Social Justice Commission, we wanted something evidence-based, right?
Yep.
So we didn't want to just bring to the community just, you know, something, right? We wanted something that was really state-of-the-art.
Yep.
And this program had been studied in Flint multiple times. So they do these studies, they call them randomized control studies. And they're complicated, and there's a lot of paperwork, statistics, and all that. But that's how science is done, you know?
Yeah.
And so these studies showed, you know, a reduction in violence in the community, a reduction in dating violence, you know, which is a really important topic as well.
Yep.
And a lot of these, ventures into violence end up in, if they're unchecked, will eventually lead to gun violence, right? Or firearm injuries. So, as you mentioned, we started working with Dr. Carter and another physician named Dr. Zimmerman.
Yep.
And there's, I'm going to talk about Safer Teens a lot today, but there's actually a whole nother effort going on in the community to develop a youth leadership board. Hmm. And they've done, that might be a really good interview in the future for
yes,
you
sir.
Because they have done fantastic work with that.
Good.
But today I'm just talking about Safer Teens. And when you look at the word Safer Teens, the ER is capitalized because this intervention was designed for the ER.
Yep.
Mm. That's how it was studied. And so we wanted to see if we could screen for violence in the emergency room. So if you have a youth between age 13 and 21, male or female, they come to the ER for any reason, they got a cold, although that's not the best reason to go to the ER.
Right.
Maybe your doctor or an urgent care center for that. But it's maybe something more serious. You know, you trip over something, you break your foot or whatnot, and you come in. We have three screening questions we ask you, you know, and they have to deal kind of about, you know, have you witnessed violence? Have you been involved in some violence? And, you know, we're not recording this. You know, this doesn't go on your record. All we care about is the yes or the no's.
Right.
Right. And so if you have a yes, then we want to offer you this intervention. It's not mandatory.
Right.
It's voluntary. And you're probably thinking to yourself right now, why would anyone do this? Why would anyone do this voluntary intervention while they're in the ER for another reason? And it turns out a lot of people want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
One, because you're in the ER for a long time.
Right. All right.
My ER physicians, I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of phone calls about that. But, you know, that.
Well, yeah, killing time.
Yeah. And two, you know, a lot of these kids, nobody talks to them. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody just sits down and has a conversation with them like, how are you? Who are you? What do you want to do with your life?
Right.
You know? And so the thing I love about Safer Teens is that it's not a lecture, right? It's not us. You know, me, some white guy in a white coat telling you what to do. It's not that. In fact, it's going to evolve. It has evolved into a person who's part of this community.
Yes.
Having a conversation with you, you know, about, hey, you know, tell me what's going on in your life. And tell me, you know, if you get in a situation that looks sketchy, you know, how are you going to manipulate or work your way out of that, you know? And what do you want to do with your life? And how do you see violence or firearm violence, like putting the kibosh on that, you know? I mean,
right.
You know, and maybe even can we talk about some ways that we can get you to where you want to go? And what's really great is that the community health worker that we've been able kind of put in the cart for
yes,
the horse a
yes,
little bit.
Yes.
But the community health worker, Melissa Reyes, that we recently hired, you know, she's really passionate too about connecting the kids that decide to do this with resources, if we can, outside of the hospital that would continue to kind of help that effort. So.
Yeah, it. I'm telling you, just for the sake of time as we're moving through here, I mean the delivery method, like you said, Doctor, the original intent of it was through the ER, and mm-hmm. obviously, you know, depending on what's coming through the doors, you could get an array of different situations.
Right.
But again, you know, if the way they answer the questions doesn't put them in that risk category, you know.
Right.
You move on to the next one kind of right. thing. And so if memory serves me correctly, we were in the pilot project, we were dealing through the ER as well as, was it Hackley Community Care or Muskegon Family Care? I can't remember if it was one or both.
Yeah, so we had initially signed up a number of institutions, but right now we have HealthWest.
Okay.
And Dr. Jennifer King, who is a private practice pediatrician.
Okay.
The emergency room.
Okay.
And then Fruitport Family Medicine will be coming on in the fall. And they're the Trinity Health Family Practice Residency Program.
Yeah, right off of the Far Road there, that newer building, I think.
I believe that's right.
Yeah. I think you're right. So anyways, that was sort of the pilot project. And again, the idea was is to work in concert with one another to create a prevention system. That hopefully, you know, it's like the starfish theory. We're going to save one starfish at a time.
Right.
And that was sort of the genesis, if you will, to a phone. I can't remember if it was an email or a phone call. Email first and maybe a phone call second I get from the good doc here not too long ago. This was March.
Yeah, I think that's right.
March of 24.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Saying, hey, so again, this goes to his passion and where his headspace is, right?
Right.
Remember, he's a urologist.
Right, right.
Okay? Just keep that in the back of your mind here, folks. Urologist.
Right.
I get an email saying, hey, I just saw this grant opportunity. It looks perfect for Safer Teens. That's the good news.
Uh-huh.
The bad news is that it's the application's due in 2 weeks. And, you know,
yeah,
no pressure.
A federal grant.
Oh,
Department of Justice.
Yeah, Department of Justice grant.
Yeah.
All right.
Whoa.
So.
Ouch.
My mind is now moving because I don't want to let the good doctor down. Two, you know, I never miss accepting a challenge, and this was a challenge.
Right. Yes.
And ultimately, within a week, I had set up a phone or a Zoom conference. It was with Dr. Stork. It was other members of Trinity and some other stakeholders to talk about how we could accomplish this. And again, when you talk about the collaborative spirit of Muskegon County, because a lot of people would say, you got to be out of your mind. How are we going to do, you know, because you got budget, narrative. I mean,
yes.
it's just not putting words on paper. I mean, you got to put meaningful words on paper. How are we going to do that within 2 weeks?
And it's competitive.
And it was for a good chunk of money. But that wasn't the attitude of this particular call. What they needed was a government agency to be the fiduciary. I said, done. I'll be the fiduciary.
Right.
And then with the help of some folks with the Health Project, which is an arm of Trinity, Laura Fitzpatrick and that crew, they took on the responsibility of putting this grant together, drafting it. Obviously, we were able, through what we had already done through Safer Teens, feed them some information. We also had to come up with a strategy of what we were going to do. And this is to the doctor's point that trying to find out where can we make the most impact? Where can we get the biggest, the biggest control group?
Right.
I'm using that term wrong, but the biggest group of
bang for the buck.
Bang for the buck. The biggest group of individuals. And
right.
And what I thought of and what I decided was why don't we look at the school districts,
mm-hmm,
and look at the schools that are struggling right now with their truancy?
Okay.
Because truancy, this is DJ Hilson's opinion. In my opinion, truancy is sort of a root cause to deeper issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just don't wake up one day and decide I'm going to be truant.
No,
there are other things going on in the household or in the in that community.
Yes.
That is causing that young person to make those decisions, and so we we sort of put the cart before the horse on that because we had to get this grant in. So we, without worrying about whether the schools were going to get on board, because I figured they're going to. I bet on that they would.
Right.
We put this plan together, which was basically the original plan to the grantors was, we want to hire 4 community health workers. So as Dr. Mm-hmm. Stork mentioned, these are individuals who live in the community, who are passionate about their community, who want to do good by their community. And ultimately they get trained in order to, to do the stuff they do through. And Trinity was going to be responsible for the advertising and hiring of these 4 community health workers.
Wow.
They were going to get trained up, and then we were going to embed them within the school districts. So there was going to be one in Muskegon, one in Muskegon Heights, one in Orchard View, and then one at the ISD, sort of mm-hmm. covering the other district, needs. And their responsibility would be to work alongside, because the ISD a few years ago, thankfully, found some funds and they hired a truancy coordinator that works with my office, not mm-hmm. directly under me, but they're the frontline folks dealing with the truancy issues at all the schools in Muskegon County,
wow.
referring them to resources and sources. And it's only the ones that decide to sort of not take advantage of those opportunities that we end up seeing. So it reduced the number of folks being referred to for prosecution dramatically.
Right.
Dramatically.
Wow.
And ultimately, these community health workers were going to be tied into that system in those various school districts and with the ISD. The point being is that, again, truancy is a symptom to a bigger cause. And
right.
What better way to start identifying potentially at-risk youth than those that are starting to make those decisions about whether or not they're going to school that day?
Right.
And so we submit the grant. We're told that of all the grants submitted, ours was the best.
Mm.
Got to give a... shout out to Laura Fitzpatrick.
Oh, yeah. Laura is an absolute craftswoman when it comes to this stuff. She's mm-hmm. really good at it. And ultimately, we through the grapevine, told that ours was really good. We get awarded this money, and then then we decide to have a meeting with the schools. Because I'll be honest with you, that meeting that we had in June, so this is all happening this year. So by middle of June, I'm sitting in my conference room, and I've got the good doctor. I've got the University of Laura. Is it Massey?
Lynn Massey.
Yep. From that violence prevention group out of the University of Michigan. HealthWest, Laura Fitzpatrick, the 3 superintendents from the districts, and I'm announcing for the first time, this is what we're going to do.
And the resource officer.
And the resource. And yeah. all the school resource officers.
Wow.
And I'm announcing for the first time, hey, this is what we're going to do. And I was betting on the collaborative spirit of Muskegon County. And ultimately, the way it was pitched, with the doctor really talking about what had been done up to this point with, Trinity and the physicians showing that we want to do more than just treat. We want to help prevent. Plus, obviously, the school resources officers being assigned to those various schools saying, yeah, this would be a much needed thing for us. really helped, I think, make the superintendents understand what a valuable resource, because they all we asked of them was, all we want is space for these community health workers to work in. That's it. You don't have to pay them. You don't have to do anything else. We just want the space and the opportunity to have discussions with these individuals and these families. Because beyond being able to deliver safer teens, the other aspect of this is that we can certainly start identifying whether or not they're at risk for violence or gun violence. But then the community health workers can really tap into the resources and individually meet the needs of these particular folks, because everybody's unique. You know, every situation is unique. There may be a general way that you describe something, but there's always uniqueness to everybody's situation. And so to be able to provide that resource to those particular families, it's going to solve not only, I think, prevent the gun violence issue, but also work on solving the truancy issue. So we're killing more than two birds with one stone on this.
We call that a win-win.
That is a win-win. So, I mean, it went over really well, I thought.
I thought they were very receptive and very gracious. And
yeah.
It was really cool to meet them. There are a lot of great people at that meeting.
Yeah, and ultimately, that's kind of where we're at. I mean, you know, we're in the process now of interviewing and hiring the community health workers, I believe, that Trinity's in that process. And what we indicated to the schools was that as far as our timeline was concerned, we were hoping to get into the schools, have them hired and trained, and be ready to go into the schools by late September, early October. And ultimately, you know, that was sort of I guess that is a timeline. What else can you say about it?
Well,
so I grabbed a lot of thunder there. I am sort of soaking in your passion on this.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say, and you deserve to be able to kind of make these kind of announcements. I mean, again, if we didn't have the leadership from your office, we would have never got the grant. I guess what I would say is that when we first started working with the Michigan Youth Violence Prevention Center, I didn't have any idea how complicated these things were to implement. You know, I kind of thought in the ER, hey, we're just going to screen and have somebody deliver the intervention. And that failed miserably, right? So we had to kind of rethink everything. We were able to get our registration team, which are fantastic, Iris Towers and her team, to do the screenings, and now, you know, we have a community health worker doing the interventions, whereas previously our social workers and our chaplains were helping us out. But we're building this thing, if you think of it as an airplane, you know, we're building it as we're flying it.
Yeah.
And when you're working in that environment, you set the deadlines and you really try to meet them, but inevitably there's just all sorts of roadblocks you didn't imagine. So we're going to get it done. The exact date we get it done is yet to be seen. But as you mentioned, there's just so much community spirit here and so many people rising to the occasion and really, I think, want to do something about this issue,
yep,
but don't know how to do something
right
about this issue. So I know we're going to get it done. And it's, you know, it's exciting to not know the future, to maybe we can come back in a year and have another conversation.
Yeah, you know, quite honestly, it will be interesting to see how we measure, you know, what you know, they always ask you what constitutes success, right? What ultimately allows you to say, well, this was something that is successful and that we need to continue it. And that's a hard question to answer. You know, certainly, you know, we'd like to see a reduction in gun violence. I mean, that ultimately, I think that is the ultimate ask here, is that this is going to hopefully intervene in a point in time in someone's life that will deter them from deciding that gun violence is the answer to whatever conflict is going on in their life, right? So that is certainly a goal. But, you know, on top of that, I really think it is, to your point earlier in our conversation, I think also it's to reach these young people who may be just looking for some affirmation, right?
Right.
Someone to talk to,
right.
And that's going to listen to them and maybe understand them better than a school counselor would.
Right.
Because, again, these community health workers are not coming from other communities. They're coming from within Muskegon.
That's good.
And they understand, you know, living in, maybe they even live in the same neighborhood, so they understand the dynamics.
Right.
And so to me, it is also building up these young people that maybe are missing that in their lives for whatever reason. And that to me is another, that would be a win. That would be an absolute win. You know, solving the truancy issues, that would be a win too. So, I mean, you know, there are going to be some hard numbers that we can look at and say, were we effective? And so hopefully within, you know, once we get this thing up and running, we get the propellers on the plane, if you will, really get to see the fruit of the labor here. It's going to be interesting to see what in the next couple of years generates.
Yeah, you know, one of the real challenges here is that there's startup funding, right? So for the Safer Teens program at Trinity Health, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention help us with funding for setting everything up,
yep.
For all of the data collection, for all the interpretation. There'll be papers written. But they want skin in the game, right?
Yep.
So they want the community to support, fund the community health worker that we have now, maybe another one in the future. This grant that we're talking about in the schools is only an 18-month grant.
Yeah.
So we got to find a way to fund this stuff, you know, long term. And fortunately, there are more funds available. There's a lot of individuals and community partners that want to contribute to this. The Michigan State Medical Society has donated, the Health Plans of Michigan, Priority Health, one of the local media companies. I mean, the list kind of goes on. And if you're listening to this, we certainly invite you to part of the sustainability of this project, because I think it's going to be part of a game changer here in the community, you know, part of this global effort. But we got to support it. We got to continue to fund it. 18 months isn't going to probably do a whole lot.
Right. Yeah, that was the only other downside, is that we had to get the grant application in quick, but the time frame to spend the money was very short. But, you know, this is where, again, where a partner like Trinity Health is so very critical, because that it's part of their core values and mission. And again, the leadership there understands how important they are to the community.
Right.
Right? I mean, Trinity is the biggest employer here in Muskegon County.
It's
the largest healthcare provider here in Muskegon County.
Yes.
So ultimately, you know, not to put dollars and cents on it, they have not only a community interest, but they have a financial interest.
Right.
We don't want to see people coming to the ER. You know, I mean, ultimately, if the ER was just nothing but crickets for hours on the day, I don't think people would come. Now, the doctors may say, look, I got to have a little action. But ultimately, you know, compared to how it is on some nights, you know, they probably would appreciate that. So, you know, it's something that I continue to brag about when I go across the state or across the country and talk about things that we're doing that others aren't, I try not to take for granted, although it always brings a smile to my face when my colleagues don't have the same blessings that I have when it comes to community partnerships. But too bad, so sad. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, ultimately, this is something that I think is going to be groundbreaking. I think we will be able to take what has already been proven to be successful in other communities and build upon it and make it better. And again, lead not only our region, but the state in how, you know, proactive gun violence prevention should be done.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm super excited about what the potential is here.
Yeah, you know, and I have on my list of things to do to thank a lot of people. And when you think about Trinity Health, you know, it really, at the at the core is people.
Yes.
Right? People like Holly Alway,
yep.
who got us in front of your Social Justice yep. Commission. People like Justin Grill, who have helped just break down the bureaucracy of trying to get something like this started.
Yep.
It's very difficult to start something new in a healthcare system. Claudine Weber, who's been just super helpful on the philanthropic side. Michelle Caserna, who does some of the data work down in the emergency room. Justin Van Grill. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I apologize to the people within Trinity and outside of Trinity that I haven't mentioned on this show.
Yeah, it takes a lot of moving parts to make something work on this scale. And it's just awesome. And really, all my role is to be a cheerleader and give money out.
Like Santa Claus.
Like Santa Claus. I am the purse strings to this operation. No, and obviously promote it and make sure that we get the right people at the table, especially the school leadership stuff. That was really important.
Now, does this program, what all are some of the things that you're trying to, I mean, besides get the data,
mm-hmm.
achieve, at the end of the day, will this make our community safer, or do we need that data to find out, or do we have a control to look at?
Well, so that's a great question. I'm not a data scientist, but I'll tell you what I know. So what I know is that, you know, they implemented this in Flint, and they showed a statistically significant reduction in violence, dating violence, drug use, alcohol use, et cetera. So from a scientific point of view, you know, we know it works. The purpose of this Centers for Disease Control study was called an implementation study. And I didn't know this, but there's a whole science called implementation science. Like if you want to improve your process, you know, at the within your profession, there's a whole science as to how to do that. And this is what's called an implementation study, at least over at the hospital. Like, how do we most effectively implement this program here? So within the hospital, believe it or not, we're not so much studying the individual effects mm-hmm. or keeping that kind of data, but they are keeping data on the community and the county as far as violent episodes, gun violent episodes, death, and that kind of thing. So I hope I answered your question, but it's kind of complicated.
I'm an idiot. So I'm trying to follow. You said some words. I'm probably gonna have to pull out a dictionary and find, you know. So, but anyway, is this just for gun violence here or in this area? Because you said dating violence.
Yeah.
All of that. I mean, all of it is important to understand.
Yes.
But this specific program will be geared towards gun violence.
That's really the, you know, to use fancy words, the outcome measure that we're looking for. But mm-hmm. it's going to have a lot of other, I think, positive effects as well. I should mention one other person. There's a guy named Justin Dirks over at the hospital.
Yeah.
This guy's a rock star. In performance improvement, and I can't say enough good things about this guy. Our efforts at the hospital were stalled, and he's an implementation guy. He came around, and he really he's a good leader, gets along with people, and really turned the course of things around for us in the emergency room. And I think he's going to really help us as we get into the schools too, because somebody just has to sit back and look at it kind of objectively and say, hey, you know, what if we did this? And maybe that would work. You know?
Yeah, you need the data geeks. I'll tell you that right now. You need the data geeks because I am not one of those people. I mean, I'll look at the final results, but numbers scare the crap out of me. So but there are folks that they love that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, it you know, like I said, I think the sort of the ripple effect of this will get into those areas outside of gun violence. Because, you know, if you have these violent tendencies or this violent thinking, it doesn't matter whether you pick up a gun or you use your fists or whatever. I mean, you're going to react in a violent nature to conflict. And that conflict could be an argument between you and your wife or your girlfriend or whatever. Right. And again, the ripple effect of this is to intervene in such a way that allows people to understand that that's not how you resolve conflict.
Right.
And so the indirect effect, you know, we may never be able to really tap into and see, but ultimately, I firmly believe that there will be that sort of ripple effect as a result of this.
That's good.
You know, I think a lot about, because there's been a lot of effort put into this, right? There's been taxpayer money
yep.
put into this. There's been a lot of effort at the hospital and in the community. And, you know, what you asked about outcomes. Well, what if we prevented one death?
Right.
Would it be worth it?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think it'd be worth it.
Yes.
You know, so, I'm confident, although we will never be able to prove it, but I'm confident that we are going to prevent deaths,
yes.
you know, and injuries. And so I think when you step outside of the dollars and cents and mm-hmm. think about your loved ones, your community, you know, what it doesn't matter how much time and effort we need to put
exactly.
into it, it's going to be worth it. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it, I agree with you 100% that, again, I go back to, I think I said this before, the starfish theory. You know, I'm going to save that one. I may not and be able to save the thousands, but I got that one.
Right.
And that's worth every single effort for sure.
Now, is law enforcement involved in this as far as the day-to-day police work, police officers? I mean, we've heard the medical side.
Yeah, no, that's why as part of this grant meeting we had in June, we had the school resource officers for all those districts as part of that, because what I have learned and what they have learned is that when you have a school resource, an officer that's there every day, knows the students by name, becomes a familiar face, that ultimately students start confiding in those individuals. And they know, I mean, there's sort of a resource to point out, hey, look, you know, Johnny or Susie here, you may want to talk to them. You may want to just have them take the questionnaire real quick, because maybe an opportunity for an intervention. They're just another set of eyes and ears that has the pulse of what's happening in that particular school district. And so that's why it was important to have them as part of this meeting and have their input and understanding as to how important this program was to make their jobs a little bit easier.
Oh, okay. Now I get it. It's coming around full circle. Law enforcement, medical, working together. Boom. I got it. The end result.
End result. End result. That's right. End result.
But I just want to make it clear, though. We're not sharing, like, the medical
right.
people aren't sharing individual data
right.
with law enforcement.
No.
Right?
Oh, no.
I just want to clarify
we,
that.
We understand
yeah.
that. It's just
yeah.
because there has to – there's a to me, there's a cause and effect. You know, for a lot of things, you need the law enforcement piece of it, in my opinion, to be able to give you or give the study group or the geeks
yeah.
the data.
Yeah.
You know, that sometimes it may not come across to the hospital because they didn't get
right.
You does that make sense?
Yeah.
Am I explaining that clear
Absolutely.
Enough?
Yeah.
You need both to kind of share that type of information to say, hey, this is the numbers we got. You come on as medical. This is the numbers we got. Now, let's see what that does, you know, and see what that is. And this is when we talk to this child. This child stated that, you know, on your end. When we were treating this child was telling us this, you know, and now all that data can come together and it's more honest, if that makes sense. Because everybody that comes across gun violence or is struggling with that stuff doesn't talk to the police or doesn't talk to the medical or whatever. So that piece with the counselors and stuff being involved, is that... Did I hear that correct? They're a counselor or resource?
Yeah, it's community health worker.
Community health worker.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, those people seem to be able to understand and be able to put it in terms where you guys would understand. Wow. That's amazing.
I think it comes from a caring spirit, too. You know, the community health workers care.
Mm-hmm.
They care about their community. And they know more about the community than probably DJ and I
ever will. Way more.
You know, so, you know, we're involved at different levels of writing papers and writing grants, but the boots on the ground are the community health workers that are really going to make the difference.
Yeah, that's why that individual, and I absolutely trust Trinity in being able to find the right folks for these positions, because they've done a good job up to this point in hiring community health workers, and they understand that's, and again, that's why having them as a strong partner in this, and actually the grant writers in this, they have a full grasp of what we're trying to accomplish here, and we'll know, you know, the right person with the right personality with the right connections to fill these roles, and so that we can make the biggest impact that we can, which is awesome.
That's good. And that will in turn hopefully be able to develop more programs to prevent, you know, this type of thing. If you're struggling with violence in your community, if you're struggling with violence at home, we have this resource.
Yes.
That could, if I'm understanding it, this eventually is to give these children that are struggling or people that are struggling with this stuff a resource to say, hey, you know, because you never know. In some communities, the community is bad. You know, the community has a, well, I don't know if I want to say bad, but has a lot of issues.
Right.
Let's put it that way. And that community need to be checked. And that's just my opinion. They need to be checked. And that's where law enforcement comes in. Like, hey, you know, all this shooting and stuff, if we got a station of officer on every doggone corner in this neighborhood for these babies, then that's what we going to do. And these babies ain't going to have to deal with right. this anymore. Now, either you get it together or we coming in and we going to help you get it together. Which one you want?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I talked to you about the cost of all this, but when I sit down and I talk to kids in high school that go to high school, go straight home, never go outside mm-hmm. because they're worried about violence and being mm-hmm. injured and their safety. I mean, what's the cost of that, right? The cost on, you know, their self-image, their view of the future, their hope. How are we going to build communities if people don't feel safe?
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's the beauty of stuff like this. You know, maybe it will, you know, develop into more monies being available to do things like I said, because I know that's an extreme. Put a police officer on every,
right.
all four corners of your neighborhood to make sure, you know, that that's a cost, you know, included in that. But to me, if I had the money, those kids' mental state, there's no cost on it.
I agree.
I don't care what, you know, and that's sometimes in America that I see a lot of false. There's great causes out there, and there's people with the money, but they're more worried about the $2 million car that they want to buy instead of taking that $2 million and investing it in the future, because one day you're going to get sick. One day you're going to need a neurologist. You know, one day you're going to need a psychologist. All this stuff costs. I don't need all of that. You know, I told my wife and my children, I said, if I ever hit the Mega Million or Powerball, I want a 5-bedroom house. All my kids to have a house. They dead, wiped clean. I pay for all of that. And the rest of it, we can just give it away. You know, I mean, because what I can work at McDonald's or Burger King. No slight against McDonald's, Burger King, to pay my taxes every year. You know, I don't need all of that. You know, and sometimes we, as Americans, and that's traveling around, you know, in Africa and stuff like that, they say we're greedy. And to an extent, I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we should be doing more with our communities, more with, you guys shouldn't have to do this, you know. We should be able to do it too and police our own community. So, but it's a great program, it seems like, and I wish it all the success. And whatever we can do here at the station to help promote it, we will make sure we're on it. Just get us the stuff, DJ.
You got it. Well, listen, I mean, there might be some PSAs or something that we can put together for sure.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Have the doc do one.
Yeah.
You know, and send it in, and we run that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when you get it together, please let us know.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, thanks. Thanks for making some time here, Dr. Stork. I know you are busy. He's busier than I am, for sure.
I don't know about that.
No, I didn't think it was nobody could be busier than you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a hard man to track down sometimes. But, you know, thank you.
Well, when I see the law calling, you know.
I don't know why. Every time.
Yeah, I'm not the only one.
Look, every time I can't make phone calls anymore. Why are you calling me?
Looking at the phone. Oh shoot! DJ called me.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, why are you calling me? I don't understand.
Like when you're getting scolded by your parents,
that's
like,
right.
Oh man.
Sorry, I'm too busy to come to that.
Right.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stork, not only for being here today, but also, you know, having a real vested, passionate interest in being a part of a solution. That this is, it's awesome. It's been a great friendship. You know, the side is mm-hmm. that his daughter is a Marquette University student. Now she just had her finished her first year. My son just finished his second year, but that's another connection.
You know, it's all such a small world, and we're all so connected to each other. If we just step back a little bit, and
yeah,
look at the big picture.
Take a good look.
Yeah.
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 Good deal. Well,
yes, sir.
Thank you, Big Rob. Thank you,
DJ.
You got it. Thank you, Muskegon, and we'll talk to you soon.